didn't think you were going so much in the medical direction when you first brought that, when I first saw it in the notes. I was thinking that it was a way to write maudlin, kind of tricky melodrama.
I think we're bearing the lead.
Not that it has to be.
We're really bearing the lead under loud music, and like all people hearing is loud music and Angela going.
This is the Freedom Beans
go.
Team from Podbay 2A, my little sea level and intergalactic prairie studios. We alter your locus to release by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 365 degrees Fahrenheit. Keep it simple and safe. It's a matter of head. Can you feel it? Andy Keaton.
Yeah.
Can you feel it, Michael W. Dean?
Yeah, I feel it. One of these days.
Is brought to you by BIPCOT, no government license. It allows use by anyone except state governments. You can learn more at BIPCOT.org. Ha ha, I did it.
One of these days, I'll teach Angela how to do radio. I did it with Nick. And Nick's five.
Yeah, I've never remembered a more violent show opening, and I was the producer for anti-war radio for several years.
A more violent what?
Opening. Who's violent? To a show. Both of you, the cats and the meows and the intergalactic space.
Are we touching like your in bad places? Man.
Oh, the fiends have been touching me in bad places for a long time. Congratulations on that thousand thing.
Yeah, you're welcome. Congratulations on touching you badly a thousand times.
I had something to say about that, but it magically disappeared from radio.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was... I'm not going to blame that board op. I'm just going to say we played an MP3 last night on the show from Jim talking about his heartfelt feelings about being a fiend and what it means in an unfiend world. And it never went out on radio. It's just like it goes to jazz music for 5 seconds. And the thing was a minute long. And it goes for 5 seconds. And it comes back and it's us talking about... Like, wow, that was really cool. But, you know, that one thing was, I didn't understand what he was saying. Like, people are like, what are they talking about? Like, I didn't hear anything about the non-aggression principle in that 5 seconds of jazz. Yeah. So you want to say
I think it should be a mystery. And those who heard it should hear it. And that's it.
Good.
It should be just a... lost in obscurity.
Yeah, I was like when you wrote me about that last night, I was like, ugh, because I just somehow assumed you wanted me to, like, you know, when I was ready to go sleep, I assumed you wanted me to edit the episode because you told me there was a mistake, and I was like, ugh, okay, but, and then you explained you didn't want that. I'm like, oh, cool.
Yeah, nice. I was just like, it just didn't air. Okay. All right. Well, I just wanted to know what happened.
Yeah.
But it was kind of interesting that everybody was talking about it, and I was like, okay, so they must have played it. They just didn't hear it.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, so.
Yeah. So,
speaking of not getting any play, should we talk about Arcade City? I want to say, like...
Yeah, well, I'm going to let really you get this out of the way, because you're not going to let me talk about... You're not even going to let me talk.
About that black girl?
About that black girl named Chautauqua that you'd hit it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. And I want to talk about cancer and how it is used in films and how there's a new thing, and I want to know if people can think of examples of the old thing with the new thing, old.
Yeah.
But we'll get to that, and then in hour two, I think, if we can get your stuff and my stuff out of the way, I think it's going to be all Angela all the time. Are you there, Angela? Yeah. Hello,
yes.
Angela?
Yes, very much.
Yeah, she vacillates on this show between, like, asleep and mad, so mad at politics that she's mad at us. And I actually prefer the latter, because it's better radio, even if I'm kind of like, geez, man, come on, lady, you know.
Well,
don't be hysterical.
I got to take a 6-minute segment in the next hour to dissect what is wrong with both of you.
Really? I think we should start with that. Get out of the way.
Anyway, so this is app called Arcade City, and it came about because of the Austin situation, where they had banned the ride sharing apps called Uber and Lyft.
Which we're bearing the lead there, because people listening who are driving their grandchildren while listening to us on the radio from church to the VFW picnic at 1 a.m. and don't know what an app is. It's not an appetizer. It's a thing on your phone, you know, on these little computers that all the kids have in their pocket now. You know, everyone under 60 now has a thing in their pocket that's a more powerful computer than what everything NASA used combined to go to the moon and back. And they just use it to, like, find imaginary monsters and, like, send dirty pictures to each other. So there was an app. There are two apps or three apps. There's a few of them. There's mainly Lyft and Uber. Uber's the biggest one. These are basically, like, replacing taxis. And, you know, so it's basically, like, if you're unemployed or semi-employed and you have a decent car and you have insurance and a clean driving record, you can sign up to be a driver for any of these companies. And... you know, when you, like, let's say you have an hour between dropping your kids off at the grandkids at the church picnic and going to the VFW picnic, you know, you have the other picnic. So you have an hour in there to kill and you have nothing to do. You can turn on your Uber app and you can make money giving people rides in your area. Yeah. And it works great. It works better than these systems with taxis where they have to buy these $500,000 medallions, which is really just, you know, and anybody who says, I don't like these new apps because they're taking jobs away from hardworking taxi drivers. First of all, a lot of taxi drivers are working for Uber in their spare time now and making more money. and secondly, because when you drive a taxi, you have to pay for rental of the taxi for the whole day from the taxi company that owns the medallion that is basically permission from the government to drive a car for money to do, you know, do favors for people for money. And if you don't get any rides that day, you lose money as a taxi driver. That doesn't happen with Uber and Lyft. It's basically you drive when you want, as you want, you know, and then there's actually like other things coming up where like it's even more decentralized, like Cell 411, which is an app that has so far replaced basically the police, where you call preset friends to come for various emergencies and they immediately know your, you know, GPS coordinates and, you know, you can film video and stream it to them. And even if the cop destroys your camera, the video is not lost. They're adding ride sharing. So it could be mission creep, but it also could be like it could be the Uber killer because Uber is kind of being regulated out of existence in some cities like Austin. OK, now we're up to your.
Right.
Go, okay. Jim. Go.
OK, so after they banned these applications, which I was going to get into.
They but you the government.
Yeah, the government. Ugh. There was a programmer and a community in Austin that decided, hey, let's make an app where it's completely decentralized, and we'll throw a blockchain on it. So you know, people get hyped up about it for no reason. There's no need for a blockchain on this thing, but that's in a whole other discussion. But either way, it was completely decentralized. You just go on there, you hop on there, and you say like, oh, I'm not giving people rides for money. I'm giving people the opportunity to play with a Rubik's cube in the back seat while I just happen to be driving them around town. Oh, I just happened to end up where you wanted to go. Yeah. And so that was the idea, and you pay with Bitcoin, and everything was working fine. They uploaded a beta version of it on the Google Play Store, which is where you download these apps that Michael was so talking about. You know, you people don't understand. They pulled it down, and they said they're going to be releasing a new version later, and everybody was like, okay, it was working fine, but whatever. And they released a new version of it. Now, this new version, the guy who created this in the meantime had been taking all kinds of venture capital money and lavish vacations, and then releases the app a little bit late, I believe. And all it is a way for you to refer friends endlessly, so that you can get enough quote unquote karma points to unlock your city. Now, Brian Sovereign and the Lava Podcast have been like talking about this recently, and
Brian Sovereign's great at like debunking bad technology. I think that's the thing he is best known for.
The Lava Flow Podcast, he just pretty much played a clip of their show because he did a great job dissecting what was going on with this thing. But basically, the people have like reverse engineered the app or looked at the source code. I'm not sure if it's open source or not, but they've determined that there's no ride sharing capabilities in this thing at all. It's just a way to refer people to unlock your city. Now, Austin
multi-level
was actually
marketing.
Getting close. Yeah, mostly
with no money.
With no money, just social capital. And when Austin started getting close to unlocking Austin, the guy went through and started deleting a lot of the karma points, saying like, oh, these weren't valid for whatever reason. And then they're basically starting from scratch all over again.
Punishing the whole class for somebody, one person.
Yeah, and then now they're talking about, okay, well, now once you get your city unlocked, then you all can agree to build this constitution for your town where you have to obey these certain rules in order to ride share in your area. So, you know, if I come from another place and they agree to a different constitution, then I have to agree to all those rules. I have to understand them and know them all. And I'm sitting there wondering, I thought this was all about supposed to be decentralization. And apparently there's also talk about having everybody do background checks and fingerprints and insurance registration and inspections and all this stuff.
And, this and you is, know, like, people, just people say that, like, Uber. People say that that makes taxis say, you know, that's what all taxis have is saying, well, you know, we have background checks on our drivers. But, you know, there have been times in the past, you know, 50 years, I can think of a few of them where... you know, people have either like stolen a taxi, painted their car to look like a taxi, or been a taxi driver and been like serial raping and murdering people and getting away with it because people have a trust in taxis as having been vetted, but the vetting is not, you know, foolproof at all.
I do think it's kind of jerky for when the media like talks about like, oh, this cab driver did this horrible thing. And then when they talk about like, oh, there's this one Uber driver that did this bad thing.
Yeah.
This is a good reason to ban Uber, but they never talk about, oh, maybe we should rethink this medallion thing.
Yeah.
This never gets brought up. It's like, you know, it's
the medallion thing is pretty much entirely, you know, government taking a tax on something they have nothing to do with. You know, they're not really like making it safer, making it better. You know, it's kind of like, it kind of reminds me of, there are places like Wyoming where to get a concealed carry permit, which you don't actually need here anymore, but they still issue them because they're valid in other states. To get a concealed carry permit here, you have to actually pass a firearm safety class and shooting class. Like, you have to be able to basically do a little better than hitting the broadside of a barn with a gun, and you have to be able to, like, not shoot yourself in the foot or your friend in the belly with a gun to be able to get a permit here. Whereas in Washington State, they don't even have that. They just charge you money, you know? So like you can't even use this minarchist argument in places like Washington State. And this is how a lot of taxi medallions are issued, of like, you know, that they vet everything going on, you know, like that's the service they're charging you for, you know, not really a service, but at least they could argue that, but that doesn't exist really in taxi medallions because they're issued to, you know, an organization, and then the organization like kind of does their own thing and tries to comply when busted, you know?
Yeah, so boo Arcade City.
Boo Arcade City.
Boo.
Dumb ideas on the blockchain don't make them good ideas either.
Nope.
On a blockchain.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Feeds with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's Antiwar.com.
Deck of cards. I'm burying
it. I'll do it. We're live, but I'll do it.
It's dead air.
Oh, is it dead air?
Yeah.
No. It's not dead air.
I'm sorry.
You have your feet down.
Look at the pizza. Okay.
Wow.
I'm staring at the clock.
Angela's awesome.
So what were you asking me before? You so rudely interrupted my message sending to a customer.
Before I interrupted the fact that Jim Jesus is too busy selling things internationally for $3 to do a talk radio show.
No, it's going to cost me $3 in order to mail everything to him after.
Well, why don't you write him and say, you know, send me a little more for the postage and give me some time. Because he broke the rules. So now you're making the rules if he wants the thing. But you don't have to say, I won't do this. Why don't you say, send me, you know, $5 more in postage and within a month I'll get this in the mail to you.
Oh, no, I can do it right away. That's no problem. It's just, it's complicated. Well, I don't have a...
All right, I don't really care, and neither does our audience. Let's move on.
Yeah.
This is completely... Yeah. All right, so I want to talk about a couple things. I want to talk about two things that have ended in the past couple of weeks. One is a person's life, someone I like, and the other is a building that's been around for 100 and some years. So I just want to do a shout out to this guy, Brian Scott, who was pretty much the only person I ever listened to on the radio other than us on local radio here. His name's Brian Scott. He died in a motorcycle accident this weekend. And I never met him. I know Nima Vidotti met him. He knew him because he was, you know, they were both like media professionals in Casper. But Brian Scott was really funny. He was funny and smart. And he had a show for decades here in Wyoming. And he did a morning show called BS in the Morning, which is kind of a, you know, like, oh, wow, kind of a shot, you know, shocker title. But he was not a shock jock, but he interviewed anybody and everybody from, like, you know, the governor to, like, the lady who owns the, you know, bison jerky store downtown. Just interviewed people all the time and was really funny and really human. And I really liked, if I was in the car in the morning, if I wasn't listening to the Fiends on my chromed robot turd, I was listening to Brian Scott on K2 Radio. He was on, there's really two talk stations in Casper, Wyoming. There's K2, which is the 50,000 watt station that people have actually picked up in Japan. Covers, you know, the tri-state area, and these are pretty big states out here. You know, it's not like back east where the tri-state area is, you know, New Jersey, Connecticut, and New York City. But no, I'm talking about, like, you know, Idaho, Montana, Wyoming, and part of the Dakotas. And it's, you know, it's the show, it's the station that Rush Limbaugh's on. It's the big commercial station. But I like him. I like the guy that runs it. I've talked to him on the phone. The Freedom Fiends, the show you're listening to, and maybe you're actually listening to this on Casper replayed this week on the weekend, if it's not preempted for NASCAR or football or rodeo, we're on KVOC, which is the 1,000 watt station, which is pretty cool too, and has, you know, some original programming and some local programming and some syndicated stuff. And it reaches, you know, all of the city and all of the county. And, you know, sometimes you can get it, you know, on the other side of the state if the weather's right. But, you know, it's basically a local station. And that's KVOC. That's the one we're on. But, yeah, he was on K2. And I was sad to read this, like, partly because he was, you know, I put it this way, like, this bothered me a lot more than, like, a lot of celebrities dying, you know, unless it's a celebrity that I've grown up listening to, like David Bowie or something. Like this is some, you know, you listen to talk radio, it kind of, like, you feel like you have a relationship with the person. Like, you feel like this is why talk radio will never die, even when radio is dead, like when it's all some other medium or over chromed robot turds or over brain implants or whatever. Like, people like listening to a voice they like with a mind they like talking regularly to them. And if you feel like, you know, whether it's one person talking or one person interviewing people or two or three people talking or the Freedom Fiends where it's three or four people, but it's 15 altogether, you know, it's voices you like, voices you get used to, and you feel like you have a relationship with them. And it's not psychotic, like, because everyone does it. Like, you know, they used to say, like, Lucille Ball, America welcomed her into their home every week. It was like that, you know, TV. But it's like that with radio, with conversation. So I miss Brian Scott a little bit and wanted to, you know, say I'm kind of sad that he died. And that's it. So I want to talk about another institution that ended last week. And it was this thing called the Chautauqua Amphitheater in Chautauqua, New York. Now, Jim, go ahead, make your joke.
Oh, yeah.
Chautauqua. We're going to talk about Chautauqua.
Oh, is she cute? I like black girls.
Yeah.
That is so stale. That is such a stale joke.
It's because you heard it earlier.
she doesn't remember. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, we'll talk about Chautauqua when we get back and why cranky old church ladies shouldn't complain when private property is destroyed and replaced with better private property.
Well, isn't that special?
Yes.
Words. You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say you didn't build that? Are you tired of elitists who think you need a government permission slip for everything? Everything you do is an A to B conversation, and the government should see their way out of it. create true free markets by adopting the BIPCOT No Government License. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows use or modification of any product, service, or software except by governments or government agents. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
I'm Angela Keaton. Am I on radio? Is this thing on?
Speaking of people that are older than, well, I'm older than Angela. I don't think Angela's old. I just think she's done a lot of drugs and acts senile sometimes. And she vacillates between asleep on this show and like so awake that she's bursting, which is really good, especially when she talks about anti-war stuff because she really knows her stuff. And I don't. I'm just like, well, Abraham had two sons, and then George Bush was born, and it's all horrible. That's pretty much my view of geopolitics.
That's dangerous history. Yeah.
That's dangerous, like, oversimplification. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I mean, that's completely forgetting the fact that everything is Woodrow Wilson's fault, which is something's kind of
you learned something.
You know, I thought about why the Freedom Fiends, this show, is great and has gone for 5 years, 1,000 episodes, but isn't nearly as popular as a lot of other shows, and it's because we're a variety show. Basically, is the reason.
We're the Carol Burnett of libertarianism.
We are the Carol Burnett. Yeah. Yeah. Some guy today was like, oh, is your show libertarian? I'm judging by the name. And someone said, no, it's anarchist. And, you know, I was like, well, I'll take libertarian too. But yeah, we're, you know, we don't believe in political solutions. But he's like, what school of anarchism is your podcast? And I'm like, ugh. You know, that's kind of like saying, that's kind of like asking someone in Pink Floyd, so you're a blues band or a rock band or a blues rock band, you know?
They're prog rock.
Yeah, I guess. No, yeah, we're kind of we're the Dream Theater meets Carol Burnett of Liberty. Yeah, it's hard to explain.
Dream Theater really only had one good album. Sorry, go ahead.
You just listen to it. They had one good album and 7,000 good guitar solos. So
yeah.
But
they all go on for over 60 minutes.
60 minutes. Yeah, there's the radio edit. It's only 48 minutes.
Yeah.
All right. So Chautauqua, Angela, do you know what Chautauqua is? A lot of people from New York City go there. I would think you might know.
Ew.
You grew up there, right?
Yeah,
you're a New Yorker. Respect lost. Go on.
No, but she left. She left a long time ago.
Oh, okay. You're okay.
She's
from
Los Angeles.
You're fine by
me. Does that earn any more respect? I don't know.
No, West Hollywood's another story. But anyways, go ahead.
Hey, Hubert Selby Jr. lived in West Hollywood.
Yeah, but that was a different Bingo. West Hollywood.
He lived like a block away from her office, or two blocks away.
Yes. I used to go to the
Baby Belt.
For reasons that cannot possibly be explained, I used to go to the Hydro store that was on one of the main thoroughfares. I forget what the street it was.
Was it near Baby Melt?
No.
Hey, Angela, you ever go to Baby Melt?
But we went
not
outside
by
one
choice.
Day.
You know what it is, yeah, right?
Yes.
It's where you have your babies melted if you don't want them. No, it's
they take
it's a
Bitcoin.
Clothing store. I'm sure they do.
They take
all right,
Bitcoin.
So Chautauqua, do you know any? Do you have any relatives that went to Chautauqua, Angela? Do you ever go there as a child?
Okay, this is. Can we get to?
I thought it was Michael Dean that was part
black. The destruction of this amphitheater, because the leads are so long that I forget what the story is going to be with my dementia and all.
And that's good because, you know, even though you're like 34, you're the same dementia rate as most of our 80-year-old listeners, which is most of our listeners on radio.
Yeah. Well, I'm your listeners, I want people off my darned lawn.
Yeah, me too. That's, you know, if you're wondering what this show's about, Grandpa, when you're listening, we just want what you want. We want people to stay the heck off our lawn. That's our political stance. So there's this place called Chautauqua, New York. Chautauqua is not a black girl name. It's not faux Afrikaan, some dialect. It's not Ubuntu Jones. Hi, do you know my friend, Abutu Jones? No, but it's, and I'm 164th black. I can make those jokes. No, but Chautauqua is an Indian word, a Native, I'm sorry, Native American word that means triggered. Two things. Means traitor? Triggered. You say triggered?
I'm triggered.
Yeah, triggered. You're triggered. All right. So it means either bag tight in the middle, because Chautauqua Lake is kind of shaped like a figure eight, or place where one was lost. And I like that. So Chautauqua Institution is this place on Chautauqua Lake that's 1 square mile. One side is the lake. The other three sides have a fence around them, and you have to pay to get in during the summer. During the winter, it's a ghost town. It's like, it's the weirdest place in the world, because in the summer, it's got like 15,000 people all the time, and in the other three seasons, it's got like 300 people that live there year round. And it's really beautiful. It's a lot of historic preservation, a lot of things. The place was started in 1860 or so, 1864, I think, maybe. And it was started as a training ground for Sunday school teachers. It was a Christian place. It was a dry town. You can't buy or have alcohol there. It's still a dry town. And I spent all of my summers there from age, like, you know, 7 to 18, because my mother owned a store there called Oriental Bazaar by Virginia. Now, we're talking about a simpler time.
Is that the precursor to Open Bazaar?
Well, it's funny because we used to get mail addressed to O period Bazaar. But no, it was, so I got to, and this was a simpler time when you could call a place Oriental, but it didn't necessarily mean Asian. It meant Asian and Middle Eastern. Like, you know, they sold a lot of, yeah, the Orient, the not here, but over there past Europe. You know, she sold like a lot of.
You can still call it that Oriental Bazaar. That's nothing. It's when you call people Orientals.
I still think today it'd be an issue. But so anyway, she had this store. It was great. I got to spend summers there. And it was a really cool place to grow up, because it's open 9 weeks is the season. And it's full of like students from all over the world. Like, you know, the third chair violinist in their orchestra is the first chair in the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, that kind of stuff. And, you know, I grew up around like child prodigy, or, you know, young teen prodigy, you know, dancers, ballet dancers, classical musicians and painters. And I got to learn to talk to people and get to know them incredibly fast, because everyone's gone in 9 weeks. So I learned to make friends with people in like 15 minutes. And it's kind of I wouldn't say a skill, that makes it sound scammy, but it's a quality I've had my whole life, including like I used to give a lot of the ballerinas foot rubs, because they loved them. And, you know, I was kind of non-threatening, and it led to one thing led to another a lot. And, you know, so it was a great place for me for a lot of reasons. But they have this place called the Chautauqua Amphitheater. It holds like 2,400 people. It's kind of indoor, outdoor. Like it's, you know, kind of a bowl, like the Hollywood Bowl. But it's got a stage with a huge pipe organ. But then it's covered on the roof, but the sides are open. There's just pillars all the way around it. And it's over 100 years old, and it was demolished 2 weeks ago. They finished the demolition, and they're building a, you know, newer, modern, better one. And people were livid about this. Like, it went all the way to the state Supreme Court because old people don't want to see something go, even if it's basically private property owned by a company. You know, like Chautauqua is a corporation, and Chautauqua quit being the cool thing that it was when I was like 10 and 12 and 14. Like, it quit being that by the time I was 18. Like, it became really corporatized and a lot more expensive. And, you know, the police force went from being like really peacekeeper-y to being like, you know, we will throw you up against the wall if we think you have a joint or a beer. And there's this thing called Chautauqua tea, which was like, even though alcohol is illegal there, a lot of the old church ladies would drink it. And what they do is they'd smuggle in bottles they'd buy two towns over, and then they would put it in a, you know, silver tea service in porcelain teacups, fancy teacups, and sit on their porch like waving at the police while they're drinking, you know, straight whiskey or whiskey mixed with Diet Coke or something. And that's Chautauqua tea. And if you Google that term, not much comes up, but there are some references of it. Because it's a term that existed mostly before the internet, so it's not on the on there much. But this place is so bizarre, man. It's like nowhere I've ever been, and it's very religious and very, like, you know, values higher education and values knowledge. I saw some amazing people there. I saw Preservation Jazz Band there. I saw 10,000 Maniacs there, of course. But, you know, saw a lot of symphony concerts there, a lot of operas. Saw, you know, heard a lot of speakers. Heard Frederick Ordway, who was, you know, one of the people that, like, helped run the U.S. space program early on and was the technological advisor for 2001 A Space Odyssey. Met him, heard him speak, heard the guy who invented the geodesic dome, Buckminster Fuller, heard him speak, met him, shook his hand, you know, like before I was like meeting rock stars, I was meeting like famous thinkers. It was kind of cool. But, and I love this place.
I think Ernie Hancock's got the monopoly on geodesic domes now, doesn't he?
Yeah, well, you know what? Here's something to know about. You know, Buckminster Fuller was a great thinker, and he invented geodesic domes, but he also invented carbon taxes. Not many people know that. He came up with that idea because he wrote this paper basically stating that every gallon of gas costs $1 million worth of damage to the environment. And so he said that there should be a tax on anything that produces carbon dioxide.
And he's also to blame for that. Those darn Venus Project people.
You're not to blame for that. They took some of his ideas.
Yeah. And there's no one there's to blame but the Venus people themselves.
So this thing got demolished this past week.
There's so much wrong.
Yeah. So this thing got demolished, and you know, it's weird how people get up in arms about things like that. Even my dad does. Like, my dad has fought politicians and, you know, had I will collect signatures and you should be in jail and you're guilty of murder, for people that want to, like, you know, close a hospital and open another one, or want to, you know, tear down an old oak tree. Like, you know, it's cool that stuff can be preserved by people owning it. And because there's a government, you know, things like the Chautauqua Amphitheater being demolished. You know, here's the thing, too. Like, it should be demolished. It's rotting. It's wood. It's falling apart. The main thing is it's not wheelchair accessible. And even in libertarian paradise, LibPair, where there were no laws that you had to have things wheelchair accessible, you'd have to have things wheelchair accessible in Chautauqua because everyone there is, like, age 60 to 95. So, you know, I can't believe that people fought tearing this thing down. But they did. Yeah. People are square. Progressives, you don't like progress. And the picture we're using is RFK on the stage of the Chautauqua Amphitheater about 50 years ago.
Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
Read this right now, or
I'd like to say now.
Shortest segment.
Now, a word from our sponsor. Before we get into cancer, here's a related topic. Idiots who want to, you know, I don't know, I want to make a bad joke. Make you wish you had cancer? No. So, J. Neil Schulman been having a pod beef. I created this word, pod beef. It's pretty good. What? Oh, Janiel Schulman. Yeah, he never responded to your demands, Angela, when you were talking to yourself the other day about him. But you can try again now if you want. So we're going to try to get about six topics into the next segment. If not, we'll bring them to the next segment. Go ahead.
This is what I understand. You have pod beefs. You insult the elderly, African American women, Native Americans, people of the Asian Middle East.
I didn't insult people.
And why? And you have a Janiel Shulman ongoing storyline, and there should be a lot more listeners to this. There should be more people bearing witness to this. Okay, because that's
radio. I was
radio,
not insulting.
That's radio that if I hope that when they're going to play that back at my trial, which will be, you know, I'm sure, like a Seinfeld end of the series trial. Like, that's what they'll play back. But, you know, I don't want people to think that we're being the mean girls against Janiel Shulman. I think everyone here is equally mashed. I think Neil is giving as good as he's getting, and he gets the opportunity to really spotlight the best of his work and discuss where things might have gone wrong.
And we're not punching down. You know, if he's right, we're punching up. You know, if he's right, he's a celebrity and we're nobody. So I think that makes it okay. I think it's bad when you punch down. This is something I learned from MK Lords, although I still punch down sometimes.
Yeah.
But usually I punch up. So, which, you know, the people that are being punched up at always dismiss as, oh, you're just jealous and trying to make a name for yourself by, you know. But this beef with Janiel Shulman has become hilarious. It has become ongoing, and just like, what will he do next? You know, other than
but
like,
I think.
Go ahead.
I was gonna say, I think he just deserves this the shortest segment. That's all he deserves.
He's not gonna get this whole segment. We're gonna talk about other stuff. But go ahead.
All right, but I just wanted to read this and then we get it out of the way. But his new claim is that you can't be an agorist and not like the movie Alongside Night.
I'm not an agorist. You know what? I used to say like that was one of the many things I claimed. You know, voluntarist, anarcho-capitalist, libertarian, agorist. I am not an agorist now, and it's because, you know, I have forsaken agorism. All it really means, and I never really was, because I pay taxes, and I'm not I'm proud to pay taxes. I like go, ugh, I pay taxes, but you know, I file income taxes on honestly, and you know, pay. I don't say I pay my fair share. I pay, you know, what the minimum they need to not throw me in a cage. And so I'm not an agorist, because agorists don't pay taxes on their labor. You know, and supposedly that will end the state.
Yeah, but here's what he's saying, basically. You can't claim to be a fundamentalist Christian and hate the Bible. You can't claim to be a Muslim and declare the Quran to be a piece of duty. You can't claim to be a student of objectivism and say that Atlas Shrugged is the worst novel ever written. And you can't claim to love America but think half of American voters belong in a basket of deplorables.
I argue with that. I've agreed with everything except that one. You know, I don't love America.
Is that only half?
You know, I'd have to say, what is America? I love living in America compared to other places. As Boston Tea Party said, it's the healthiest patient in the cancer ward. Although he said that about 18 years ago. I don't know if that's still, you know, we're in the top 10 healthiest patients in the cancer ward.
I do know people who are claimed to be objectivists who say that Atlas Shrugged, while
is a horrible
is a horribly written book.
Yeah, it's the canon, but it doesn't have to be good.
Yeah. And it kind of mirrors like my problems with it, is that like it'll go on for like three paragraphs about like, oh, Hank Ridden raised his eyebrow, signifying his devotion to individualism.
It's word porn, man.
Yeah, and it's like, oh gosh, I know what he means by raising his eyebrow. Porn. Okay, do we need to have a three-play soliloquy about it?
Yeah, that book could be a lot shorter and rock. Okay, read really quick. Read the rest of his crap.
If your aesthetics are such that a clear expression of agorist content is more than competently made low-budget indie film turns you off, please stop calling yourself an agorist, because you're not. You claim to be any other flavor of free thinker you like: anarchist, libertarian, patriarch, anarcho-communist, mutualist, and
so you have to like his movie to be in the.
But you are not an agorist,
basically. His crappy movie based on a good.
And the
novel.
Thumbnail is the nuclear warhead with the antiwar.com. Sticker on it.
Nice.
Doing it wrong.
Not paid product placement, I'm imagining.
Yeah.
Unwanted. He paid them. He should pay antiwar.com for that product placement. Angela's going. Look at a whole half hour of that last half hour.
the Freedom Fiends now have a free app for your Android phone, tablet, phablet, or other chromed robot turd, available now from the Google Play Store, Amazon, and FreedomFiends.com. Lovingly handcrafted by head hamster Michael W. Dean, the artisanal Freedom Fiends radio app allows you to listen live, keep up with the podcast, chat directly with other fiends, get discounts on bigger buttons, brainwash yourself with a 24/7 random episode, and so much more. You know the Freedom Fiends is the best libertarian radio show in the world, but when the Fiends aren't live, you can use the app to listen to LRN.FM from anywhere. The Freedom Fiends radio app is like having a virtual libertarian re-education camp in your pocket. It's your gateway to the exclusive, high-demand group that is the Freedom Fiends. Install the Freedom Fiends radio Android app today. It's free, and of course, it's covered by the BIPCOT no government license. Tell two friends, review it on Google Play and Amazon, prepare for the inevitable death of terrestrial radio, and get ready for LibPair with the Freedom Fiends radio app for Android. Worms. Worms.
Freedom Fiends, words, other words, and consonants and vowels.
Wordsy words, McWords face.
And words, McWords face. And it's brought to you by BIPCOT or something. Learn more at BIPCOT.org.
So, Survival Research Labs. You guys know what Survival Research Labs is or was or is?
Yes,
actually.
Yes.
Tell us, Angela, what is it?
It's a, well, they call it a performance art group, but it involves the beauty and magic of robots and gears and loud noises and explosions and machines and robots and things attacking each other.
Destroying each other.
No people. Yeah. There's no, it's not a people thing. It's something done in an urban landscape.
They have done it with animal carcasses attached to the robots in the past, though. That got a little too
Thankfully,
much.
Thankfully, I did
attention.
Not see that one.
Yeah. There's a video
on
YouTube.
Is this about this this robot that got arrested in Russia?
No. Okay. This is about a longtime California institution. It's something that's...
Am I being detained?
From the Bay Area.
Am I being detained?
So Survival Research Laboratories is this thing that's been around for about 30 years in San Francisco. I remember, I never actually saw one of their street performances, and they would do things on, there's a lot of video on YouTube. If you, it's worth looking at. Google, go on YouTube and search Survival Research Labs or Survival Research Laboratories. We'll also put some in the show notes. I mean, they did things that were revolutionary in their time. Like in the early 80s, I remember around San Francisco when I was a bike messenger in mid 80s, seeing these giant black and white posters. And they always had names like, oh, I don't know, long names in all capital letters of things like... What are some of them? I'll look it up. But An Epidemic of Fear is one. That was one of the shorter titles. They had one. They had a performance called Extremely Cruel Practices. And they would basically use, like, now this is before you could go into a store and buy robots, radio-controlled robots. Like, they built this stuff, and they were not computerized in the early days. They were radio controlled usually, or just like set to crudely go in one direction until another one hit them. And they would kind of take over areas under bridge overpasses in the city in San Francisco. And just, you know, people would know about it ahead of time, but people would show up. There'd be, you know, several hundred people. How many were at the one you saw, Angela, and what year was it, and what city was it?
I'm pretty sure it would have been the 06 show in Los Angeles. It was sometime in the second half of last decade, but definitely in downtown LA, where, you know, if you go into like the brewery district, there's a lot of great places, parking lots, abandoned
lots.
A lot
of bad performance art, but a lot of great performance art.
Yes, it's actually a really wonderful place and somewhat underrated in art scenes.
I like the brewery. Yeah. Yeah, an old roommate of mine I don't like lives there. Oliver Arms is his name. He's a painter. But, yeah, the brewery is a form. What?
Oliver Arms?
Yeah, that's his
name. Oliver Arms?
Oliver Arms. Yeah. He's got a Wikipedia page that he wrote himself. Look it up. He does. I'm positive he wrote it. He probably, especially since the name of the person that did most of the edits is West German Colonel, and he has a big interest in World War II memorabilia stuff and history. So, So Survival Research Labs would have these events, and they were the kind of things that if they had them now, like they still have them, but if they had them now, like they had them then, the Department of Homeland Security would show up with a SWAT team and shut it down. I'm not exaggerating. I mean, it was, you know, they had unlicensed explosives and fires and things, shooting fires and things. There's actually a news piece from, you know, one of the San Francisco news teams doing a news piece on them that's on YouTube. And it's like, they brought a decibel meter and it's, you know, 30 feet away from it or 50 feet where the people are standing, it's producing a level of noise that causes instant hearing damage. The one event I saw of theirs was an installation show somewhere south of Market in San Francisco, and it was the only time that I've ever signed a pain waiver. You know, like on Death Clock, they always talk about, like, well, to see this band, you have to sign that you may die, you know. And it was the first time I ever saw or signed, and last time I ever signed a pain waiver. I've used pain. I made pain waivers when I had some interns come with me to film and interview Guar one time. But this was like, it was really primal and really primitive, but really advanced at the same time. Like kind of like it was like 1950s and the 2050s at the same time in 1986. And the anti-war component I wanted to say out of this, Angela, was that a lot of their, you know, they didn't really have a message so much with a lot of their stuff, but with interviews from the guys and with you know, like the guy was, I don't know if he's necessarily anti-war so much as like anti-military industrial complex. He's definitely Mark Pauline, the guy who runs the thing, who actually, I heard an interview with him one time. He has a deformed hand from blowing it up during one of the, you know, preparing for one of these performances. And after that, he said, before this, I blew my hand up. I was just into this for the art. Now I'm just kind of in it for the money. Because I think they get a lot of grants and stuff, private organizations and weird funding channels. You know, it costs a lot to keep this thing together. But the thing that is the weird anti-war component of it, of like, is I don't know if this is defeatist or what, but they were doing robot battles before anybody, before like battle bot competitions were a thing that you could buy, you know, go to like Vegas on the Strip and see. They have those in Vegas, don't they, Jim?
I guess.
But, you know, it's a popular thing, like robot battle bot competitions. I mean, they've even done a CSI episode on it. And the thing is, like, Survival Research Labs, who were anti-war, created battle botting, which, you know, from that came a battle bot culture. And the battle bot culture now is used as a recruiting ground for the military industrial complex. Like, basically, they find the guys who win that or the girls that win that and say, like, hey, come work for us. We'll give you lots of money for, you know, you can do whatever you want.
Killing people.
Yeah. Yeah. And these are the people that are building those, you know, that are designing those, like, those terrifying dogs that you see, you know, like mechanical dogs that you see on YouTube. You've seen those, right? They were made by some company owned by Google. But that's the irony of it to me, is like, you know, you make this cool thing that's anti-war and it ends up being influencing heavily something that ends up being a recruiting tool for the war effort. Comments, Angela?
Everything belongs to Empire.
It really does. Yeah. Why is New York the Empire State? I mean, do they have vast overseas holdings? I guess they do, probably.
The whole history of Dutch colonialism?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Don't get me started on New York.
I'll raise you $6 worth of beads and throw in a tulip bubble. All right, so Survival Research Labs. Yeah, the thing I saw was like you know, it was in an art gallery, but they'd taken it over, and it was dark and smelled like diesel, and it was really loud. And I was the only person in it when I went in it. You know, it was kind of like, yeah, come when you can. We're open at 9 to 5. And it reminded me of what I picture hell like. You know, it was noisy and smelly and loud and weird and evil and cool. Not that hell's cool, but if it exists, it sounds bad. And, you know, there is audio purgatory. And you know who's going there, Jim?
That'd be Tom Woods.
Yeah. And he's going there for crimes against humanity, audio crimes against humanity.
There was an interesting post on the MWD, Bat Audio Removal Service, so to speak, about Tom Woods, which you should check out. Yeah,
the art that went up today, or the fact that he referenced us and made fun of us for caring about audio a couple
weeks
ago.
When was that? I want to hear the show, because I can't possibly listen to all of his
shows. I thought you sent it to me. Somebody sent it to me. I don't know. Whoever sent it to me, put it on Jim Jesus's page or my page.
Put it on my Facebook.
Put it on the Bad Audio. It's MWD Bad Audio.
www.facebook.com.
No, it's http://www.
Is it the forward slash or the backslash?
I'll give you
remember.
A backslash. All right. So, yeah, SRL's cool. And I like
Tom Woods. I just wish that he would just take 10 seconds to say, hey, you sound pretty bad. I can barely understand you. Do you want to, like, step closer to the mic?
With his co-host. Yeah, like, yeah. Yeah, you know, and he says that he can't do anything about it, but he can.
He can.
You can take, you know. I mean, compare the interview that James Weeks II did with us and the interview he did the day before with, who was it, Jared? Somebody's podcast. Like, everything he did before us sounded horrible. And then the same equipment and me taking a half hour. I took a half hour with him because it required that. But, you know, I could have taken 5 minutes and it would have sounded better. But I don't know.
Yeah. Like when I first started having Seamus on from Freedom Tunes, which is an awesome channel.
Yeah, I love
him.
Stuff.
Like he had some issues with audio with echoing and you know, it just took some time to say, okay, well, why don't you try plugging in here? But do you have like another pair of headphones, because I'm hearing myself in it? You know, just doing a little bit of that, and then, you know, we got it sounding great. There was some little leakage, but for the most part, it sounded good. Like, it was passable. It didn't sound like, you know, Austin Peterson transmitting from an AM station on the other side of a hill 20 miles away. You know, it was
through some tin cans.
Yeah.
And an electric
fence. And then expect
me
to listen to that debate. I could not listen to that debate because Austin Peterson sounded so horrible. I mean, he sounds horrible anyway, but he also had bad audio on top of that.
Hey, did he ever write you back? He sent him some a bad audio as a hate crime sticker.
No, I don't think he said anything about it.
To his dad's house, because he lives on his dad's back porch, right?
Yeah, and he had his address.
Allegedly.
He had his address on the on his for president website, which is his dad's.
Yeah, you know, if I ran for president, not that I ever would, but if I would, as soon as I lost, I would just destroy that site. I wouldn't leave it up.
Yeah.
Because otherwise people might get your address and send you bad audios and hate crime stickers.
Yeah.
All right, when we come back, one short segment about cancer in the movies, and then Angela is going to do something between the break and then come back revved up to talk about Syria for a half hour.
Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Well, people don't know what you're talking about. They just think you're reading to yourself. All right, so this is Freedom Fiends. I'm Michael Dean. I'm talking to Jim Jesus, and Angela Keaton's over in the corner just fuming about Hillary Clinton and how much she hates her and wants to talk about it.
Is fuming a double entendre?
Yeah, it's a new drug all the kids are doing in West Hollywood. All right, so... I want to talk about cancer in movies and TV. I say shows. You know, that's the industry term. Like, it's actually like the production term. Like, you know, if you're going to go get some sound work done, you know, you call up the sound studio that does the work post-production and say, I want to get some sound work done. They're like, well, how long is your show? Like, doesn't matter if it's a movie or a series, or, you know, it's a show. So media, visual media with audio is a show. So I want to know. So I really like how in my favorite show, Breaking Bad, pretty much favorite TV show ever, the inciting incident, and that's a term. Do you guys know that term? The inciting incident.
I do now.
Yeah, it's a term. It's a screenwriting term for the thing in every movie that makes the story happen. You know, it usually happens in the first 10 minutes. It's usually, you know, the hero is usually somewhat of a normal person in the first 10 minutes, and then something calls him to some great adventure, and he has to solve all these problems, and he becomes this super person in some way. And the thing that makes that happen is called the inciting incident. And in Breaking Bad, it is this mild-mannered teacher getting cancer. And unlike every other show I've ever seen where cancer is, and cancer is in a lot of shows. There's a lot of movies, Brian Song, Love Story, people getting cancer, bravely battling it, dying, living, whatever. Like, you know, and it makes
there's
sense.
There's a lot of cancer. I was going to say there's a lot of cancer in Alongside Night.
There is a lot of cancer in the world. Like, one out of three people get cancer in their lives. And there's a...
over your head. Okay.
I got it. I got a lot to say in very little time. But,
okay.
So, you know, it makes sense that there's a lot of movies, a lot of shows about cancer, because everybody knows someone who has cancer. Either you've had it, or you know someone who had it, or you had a relative who had it, or whatever. So it touches everybody. Everybody can relate. Everyone's scared horribly of it. And here's the interesting thing, too. Like, cancer has a bad rap, which sounds ridiculous. Like, well, of course it does. But there are diseases that are more deadly than most cancers. Like heart failure, 100% of the time, if you don't get a heart transplant, you're going to die. And it can come up really quickly. You know, some cancers... Do you guys know about harmless cancers? And this is not some conspiracy
thing. Like skin cancer?
Well, that's one of them. Skin cancer is almost never deadly. It's almost when treated quickly. It can be treated often in one outpatient procedure. Thyroid cancer and prostate cancer can kill you, but also people can live with them and live normal lives and never even know they have it. Do you know that, Jim? As someone who works in a nurse adjacent in an adult old living facility, senior living facility.
Yeah, but I don't really deal with people with cancer, so that's, yeah.
Well, here's the thing.
With dementia, Alzheimer's, and...
Everybody over 80, one-third of people over 80, when they die, have thyroid cancer, and it's not what kills them. A lot of them.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, it's like thyroid cancer in and of itself is not harmless, but a lot of thyroid cancers are like people live with them and never know it, and never it doesn't kill them or hurt them. Same thing with prostate cancer, but a lot of cancers are horrible and devastating and kill people and have a really bad life, really bad short or long life, and then die. So it makes sense that cancer is in a lot of shows, but I think this thing is new, and I think it came from Deadpool, from the comic book, actually, of like, you know, most stories about cancer are about bravely battling it and living, or bravely battling it and dying, or, you know, they touch on it like Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants or whatever. But I haven't seen anything before Breaking Bad where like the main character gets cancer and quits being a wuss and becomes a gangster, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that's what happens. Like, he gets cancer and he's like, well, I'm gonna fight it, but I might die, and now that I might die, I'm gonna like commit huge felonies every day and, you know, shoot drug dealers. And I think that Deadpool, it happened in the Deadpool comic book in 1990, way before Breaking Bad. I want to know if anybody knows of a major story, you know, pop culture story, book, movie, TV show, whatever, before Breaking Bad, or especially before the comic book 1990 Deadpool, where that happens, where the person gets cancer and instead of bravely battling it, like bravely battles it and becomes a badass.
Yeah, well, he was already a badass before then, though.
Walt?
Deadpool was.
Oh, no, Deadpool. Yeah.
He was a mercenary.
But he became an uber badass.
Yeah.
Yeah, with magical powers. But yeah, Walt just came from being Melvin Milquetoast to a gangster. So I want to know.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. I've run websites since 1996 and have used over a dozen web hosts in that time. AgoristHosting.com is the only one that hasn't broken my heart. Agorist Hosting's uptime and service is stellar, and their DDoS mitigation is the best I've seen. That's important because if you tell the truth in this world, you'll ruffle feathers. No matter what the haters hit us with, Agorist Hosting keeps our websites online. If you have a mission-critical commercial presence or a world-changing activism site, go with AgoristHosting.com.
I heard that. So, Angela. Oh, wait, no. Actually, Michael Dean has to step out temporarily because he has a toe fungus that he needs treated. So, yeah. So, speaking of toe fungus, what's going on in Syria?
That's a very smooth segue. I'm glad they left you alone in Boothland Radio Booth Station. Dear God, the hell! Everything just goes straight to hell really quickly when the lead-ins. No, it's I have a in my professional capacity, I have a longstanding policy of not discussing Syria because Syria brings out trolls only known by people who generally work in the area of Israel and Palestine. In foreign policy, but since this has been an extremely busy week, there was a ceasefire agreement. Dear God, please do not explain all the different parties and the idiocy in this involved. But there was a ceasefire. Okay, then something highly unfortunate happened. I mean, really highly unfortunate happened. The U.S. bombed an army airbase and killed 83 troops.
Mm.
And then, so yes, it killed an actual Syrian army base, right? So. Syria government, the U.S. government, and then after this unfortunate incident, ISIS basically overran the place.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, just in other words, it's okay. It's completely going to hell. And then today, the Syria ceasefire collapsed, and the Syrians and the Russians are trying to retake the territory they lost to ISIS. So, yeah. Bad things happened. While this was all unraveling, while the final days of Syria before the last helicopter out becomes an issue. Like the last,
I like helicopter rides. Go on.
Yeah, the last helicopter out of Aleppo or something, or out of Damascus.
What is Aleppo?
God, it just like totally, you know, it totally slows the roll when a Gary Johnson joke comes up. It like kills my ability to think. This is like I've been up almost 20 hours now, which just happens on Fiend Show days. Like I'm up that late, so if I have to think back, my brain doesn't work that well anymore. Okay. On only 4 hours of sleep. So yes, that's what happened. And all right, so in the middle of all this, where the hell was I? Okay,
Aleppo.
Aleppo. Okay. Saturday is usually a no news day in the U.S. I don't know why. Maybe because it's Sunday in Europe. Nothing explodes or happens or what the heck knows. But anyway, it's generally a
ceasefires
slow news
actually
day.
Work on Saturday, I take it.
Right. It's usually fine. What happened following, or totally incidental, is a series of things. There was a supposed bomb threat with a race that was going to be run by Marines, and then there was a intentional explosion in New York City, and then there was a Minnesota mall stabber who claims to be a soldier of ISIS. That was all this weekend.
Yeah, there was a lot of stuff to talk about each one of those. I guess there was an off-duty cop that shot him. And I don't know if you've heard this, but it's true that in a crowded area you can't, with someone with a gun, can't stop another person with another weapon, right? That's all right wing myths, right? Except when it actually happens, right?
I'm all fine with mall shootings.
So okay,
I have to get my tweet in for the night.
Out of context, fiends right there.
Basically, I guess the point is that I think it's too late to do anything about the U.S.
Okay,
and I don't mean that in the financial collapse way. I think the U.S. empire has expanded so much and is on such a quick. I mean, the Middle East is unraveling so quickly, and everything is coming apart. And when Hillary Clinton's president in November, it's only a matter of time before she invades an allied country, which is kind of, well, the Syria, never mind, I didn't want to go there, but I was going to go back to Obama and Pakistan and all other nonsense, but anyway, it's only a matter of time before she picks a fight with a nuke power, maybe Russia, that's going to cause us some problems. I mean, bigger than the ones we already have, including mall stabbings, in Minnesota.
Are you still, is this premised on that she's going to become president for sure?
I'm not sure. Oh.
I'd give it 2-1 odds, but I wouldn't give it 10-1 odds.
In my professional capacity, I have no idea, but in my blowhard nighttime radio capacity, I'm sure it's her. It's her.
I like that.
It's what
she's
deserve.
Already been anointed. Yeah,
that's
anointed two, and appointed and
that's
touched.
Two personalities that most people don't get to have in 10 lifetimes. It's great to have them both in one lifetime.
The situation today, if you had to watch the news for your job, it was back to back hysteria and stupidity and non-reporting.
Yeah,
and this is during an election cycle.
It's kind of interesting that bomb went off in New York, and I have a bunch of people who live in New York who were initially like, oh, does anybody live in Chelsea? Anybody okay? Okay, everybody's okay? All right, fine. And then that's the end of it. I have not seen them talk about it. Otherwise, they're just like, we don't care. Whatever. Stuff happens. Move along.
Did they get command center just now?
Yeah, and of course, Trump is using this as, a platform to, oh, this is why I need to be elective. But I guess Trump is also saying that he doesn't want the bombing suspect to have a hospitalization or a right to an attorney.
Yes.
Hey, I got to go off air for the rest of the show. I spilled water all over my gear. I got to shut it down. All right. Have a good show. Bye.
Ooh. Smooth.
Yes. That's a tragedy in the studio. Probably ISIS. Probably an ISIS-related crime.
Confirmed
happened.
ISIS.
And
ISIS.
I was going to say Winona, but I meant Wyoming.
Oh, okay.
That's what I meant to say. Wyoming, not Winona. In Winona. About Winona, it's the perfect world for Trump, right? Because he's going on and on about, oh, the Islams do stuff, stay out, deport, arrest them, torture, yeah. Guantanamo relatives. It's perfect for that, and he's considered the less hawkish candidate. That's where we are today.
Yeah, where he wants to bomb the ass out of ISIS. That's the not hawkish position.
Right.
Yeah.
That's where we are. We're not, and that to me is an argument right there against democracy. It's lies. It's all lies. The illusion of choice, the nonstop support for the military machine, how we're going to make that football player's life miserable because he won't stand for that horrid song that they insist on playing before sports games to harsh our mellow.
Yeah.
It's
absolutely terrible. They fought for his freedom to do that, so he shouldn't do that.
Right. Patriot logic.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense to me. And the whole flag burning, I died for your right to do that. Okay, let me do it. Don't punch me in the face. Not that I would do that. I think it's a very ineffective way of just getting a message out, and it just makes people upset. But at the same time, you just kind of have to laugh when every time they get upset. I can just enjoy just watching them getting upset because it's totally unnecessary.
Well, I want to look up as of today, since the protest of the national anthem began. I'm going to ruin this football player's name, so that's why I don't say it. but police have killed 67 people in 22 days since this all began.
Yep. Yeah. But, you know, my flags, my songs, that's more important than your feels. So, or my feels are more important than your feels. Yeah, I don't really care about the whole sports ball, you know, rituals that, you know, people do want to do or don't want to do. What's interesting is that in the NBA, I think it's NBA, in the NBA, they're actually required in their contract to stand for the Pledge of Allegiance and, or not Pledge of Allegiance, the National Anthem, Pledge of Allegiance, that same thing. Yeah, they're all required under their contract to do it, whereas the NFL are not. So they pretty much have the option to do it. But, you know, if you don't have a sports career where you can, or if you don't have an endorsement deal to ruin, you know, you can make a stand like that. And then everybody goes like, oh, okay, he may have something interesting to say. And then he comes out wearing a, Fidel Castro t-shirt. And it's like, yeah. Yeah, the enemy of my enemy is not my friend.
Sure. There's a lot of the Shea Sheik. I got over being outraged about that a long time ago. I might just, you know, I mean, it's a million and one things to be outraged by, including the frogs, the sinister frog that comes out of nowhere.
Oh, the Pepes.
Yeah, I have very large things to worry about with human rights, so I'm not so worried about sinister frogs. Or, you
it's
know,
not even
or,
a sinister
you know,
frog.
Well, it has a very mean look. It has an angry little frog look.
Oh, the Pepe?
Yeah, look, it's not a nice frog.
It doesn't matter how rare your Pepe is. What really matters is that it's not a white nationalist thing at all, but the internet has certainly trolled the media into thinking so. And the guy who originally drew Pepe just recently like denounced the alt-right and Trump and then made a Pepe who is, in a way, desecrating a picture of the Trump Pepe as a kind of a protest to how his Pepe is, how his original Pepe has been, you know, distorted by other people's rare Pepes, you know.
Frogs are gross.
Trump's a rare Pepe, so.
The frogs are gross, and it's like trying to explain the whole matter of the Civil War to people. Only people are starting slowly to come around to, yeah, Abraham Lincoln was a white supremacist and really didn't give a damn. Like, we're now only finally coming to
the war of Northern aggression?
And, well, no, there's another point of view. There's some other point of view not heard, and that would be the anarchist
nuanced
one. Yeah, the anarchist position on that. And the same thing with explaining the Che t-shirt. There's an anarchist position on that, but it's not going to be heard. And it's not as if anyone in NPR is really lauding Che. You know, the limousine liberals really don't. I mean, that's long over. That's just something you see in certain quarters. More of a signal than I think I love Che Guevara moment. And I'm sure someone will take that tiny little thing that says, I love Che Guevara, and play it over and over again.
Out of context, fiends, where are you?
So
we'll come back from the market with more Che.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
My fellow sheep, election season is upon us. Are you one of the 12% of Americans who still approves of our government? Then we need your help to force the other 88% into compliance. Our democracy depends on it. We're an organization called Citizens Against Too Much Unfettered Freedom, or CATMUF. CATMUF is a bipartisan flock of sheep whose goal is expanding government until nothing else remains. Because the government is here to help you. How can you help CATMUF help you? By only voting for candidates dedicated to expanding government. It's easy. You don't need to study the issues. No matter what a politician says when running for office, they're all dedicated to expanding government. And make sure you tell all your friends and family to vote for more government. Here at CATMUF, we don't care if you vote Democrat or Republican, as long as you vote for candidates committed to growing our federal family. CATMUF, because folks just aren't smart enough to handle real freedom.
That scared me.
We're going to hell.
Everyone involved is not doing well. Okay, that's just put that there. No one from the show is doing well.
Yeah, it's so like we need some redemption. Give me some redemption.
I can't. I can't grant you absolution either. It's not in my power. But in more Trump hysteria, and mind you, Trump is a noxious... A noxious piece of celebrity culture. The anti-Trump hysteria has gotten so bad that one of the Kennedys, Kathleen Kennedy Townsend, is running her mouth, claiming that George H.W. Bush, the 92-year-old former president, is voting for Clinton. So far, no comment from the elder Bush.
Hmm.
How's that? Is that a good summary? I don't know. I didn't really actually read it. I'm just guessing.
So, yeah, I guess this is kind of just like to Hillary Clinton. I know there was even talks about Jeb Bush maybe voting for Gary Johnson.
Well, that's just nonsense. That's just Bill Kristol.
You know that's not going to happen.
Well,
no.
I'm just assuming Bill
Kristol. Bill Kristol will not allow for Gary Johnson to get his support in any way, shape, or form because, you know, Gary Johnson doesn't want to bomb everything. That's what his real problem is with both of these candidates. He don't thinks they're going to bomb them enough. That's why he doesn't like Trump, and that's why he doesn't like Hillary, and that's why he doesn't like Johnson, or anybody, for that matter.
No, I agree. He does seem to want to disrupt the Trump campaign, which is odd, considering he can clearly have discussions with Trump. He can, mm-hmm. And Norman Podhoretz is supporting Trump. The godfather, the living,
I don't know who that
living
is.
Pope, the living pope of neoconservatism.
Ew.
He became the pope of neoconservatism and Irving Kristol died.
Does he have a funny hat?
I'm sure he has several.
Does his name make America great again?
Okay. They should be sold in Commentary magazine. That would complete the circle of the circle of stupid.
All right.
Yeah. No,
so while Western civilization is falling, you can kind of see, you know, some glimmers of fun coming out of it, like George Bush voting for a Democrat. Yeah, that's funny.
Donald Trump Jr. compares Syrian refugees to poison Skittles.
Yeah, if you have a handful of Skittles and two of them are going to kill you, would you eat it? But it's kind of a bad scenario. Because aren't those a lot of the lone wolves are kind of American bred anyway, aren't they? A lot of the time. They get inspired over the internet. And, yeah, it's not really the refugees that are the... I do have a problem with them bringing refugees in on taxpayer dollar. That's a terrible idea in every conceivable way. Every conceivable way. But you know, if they can get here on their own, I'm all for it. Whatever.
Taxpayer dollars are horrible in every way. Taxes are horrible.
This is taxation
going right
is bad.
To the root. I'm just striking the root. I no longer have a pizza clock. All the computers around me have collapsed.
Okay, that's fine.
So
we've only got a couple more minutes anyway, so.
Oh, so, I mean, are we redeemed? Do you feel that this has been redemption? I don't know. I really don't know. I don't think we did enough with the amphitheater. that piece, the little piece of Michael's life, I feel like we didn't crush it enough.
No. I guess there was some rumors that Gary Johnson, who is the Libertarian candidate's vice presidential candidate, was talking about dropping out of the race. That was a rumor for a while. He says that it's not true. But he said, but the rumor was that he wanted to drop out of the race to support his good old pal, bestie, Hillary Clinton. He doesn't want
there
Trump
was not
to
just any rumor. It was Carl Bernstein who dropped that rumor.
I don't know who that is.
Really, kid? Really?
I'm talking for the audience.
Oh. Oh.
I don't know who that is. Tell me who that is.
Okay. He was a very important reporter. He and another man, Woodward, broke the Watergate story. That was in the early 70s. It was a very big deal.
Okay.
They had a source they called Deep Throat.
Can you say that on air?
That's a story about... That's a like a highly relevant, most important news story of last century, probably. That's U.S.-based. It brought down
a presidency. I don't watch vintage naked movies. I'm sorry. Oh.
There's no hope for you. There's just no hope.
Well, I guess redemption is 70s erotica films.
There's nothing wrong with that. No, you know what? There's nothing wrong with 70s erotica. That was a very high quality of erotica.
Okay.
Are we there?
Bush.